From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is ESPN 97.5. KFNC Mont Bellevue, Houston, a Gal Media station. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank. Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back.
What's up, Black Sheep? What's up, Black Sheep?
Hello, what's up, H-Town? On a Tuesday afternoon, it's gloomy outside, so we got nothing but rainbows and sunshine inside. It's Barry Laminack along for the ride. It's Joel Blank with him, and behind the glass, it is Nick Sharara as we get going on what possibly could be on your mind and what's on our mind, and we talk about sports because it's important. It's not life-threateningly important, but it is important. It's not as important as Ken Bone to the rest of you, but we can talk about Ken as well as we get rolling in the show. It is yours to debate with us from 1 to 4 p.m. We guarantee there'll be no flies on us, and we will answer the questions that you have directly as we get started. I guess the agenda from last night into this morning was the fact that Monday Night Football became Kickgate, because Randy Bullock could have a job very soon if Tampa Bay's kicker got any worse.
Dude.
And Nick and I were talking about it this morning, and the bottom line is it was a dog game.
Yeah.
It was awful.
Horrible.
Right? No Cam Newton, and we can get into that too, by the way, because there was a Cam sighting, and it wasn't quite Jadeveon Clowney,
yeah,
but it was something he shouldn't have been doing. And it was a turnover festival, and the Tampa Bay kicker could not hit a chip shot. He could not hit a 47-yarder. He couldn't make anything until he made the game winner.
Yeah.
And the only reason in my mind, but the only reason in my mind he still got a job is because they wasted a second-round pick on this guy.
Yeah. He, 3 for 5 isn't great. His long was 38, but he made the one that counted. And I like the story that Gruden told during the game about Janikowski, where he was just missing field goals left and right, and he trotted him out there for a 58-yarder. Just so he could miss it and cut him, and he made it, and they celebrated, and that's the life of a kicker, man. I was thinking about that, watching that kid on the sidelines. One, I'm imagining all the suicidal thoughts going through his head, like, could this be the first live suicide in an NFL game? Like, he just hangs himself from a fan somewhere, or maybe the top of the kicking net, I don't know. I was just like, God, I would lose.
Calm, though, for the most part.
Yeah, but as a rookie, too, I would lose my mind.
Yeah. And Gruden was talking about this. Neither one of you guys are big golfers. And I was a pretty, until we had a baby, I was like an intense golfer, right?
Okay.
And like a 4 or 5 handicap.
Oh, God.
And
no.
So you really get into it.
I shot at 86 once. Does that count?
That's good. But at the same time, golfers are like kickers. And that's why kickers play a lot of golf. And I was trying to explain to Nick, you don't even say the word shank in golf because you're afraid you're going to get them. But if you get them, it is such a game of mental hopscotch where every single swing you start, and any golfer out there knows what I'm talking about. Mentally, every time you get over the ball, you feel like it's going to happen again. And when it does, it is like this demon that is slowly eating up every bit of your insides, and you can't figure it out. You can't stop it. And it is the most, just, it's the most ridiculous feeling in the world. And that's what I relate this to in terms of the kicker for the Bucks, because look, he was a 2-time Groza Award winner, I believe, in college. I mean, hands down the best place kicker in football for the last 2 years, which is why they drafted him in the second round.
And I don't think he ever had a situation, and I think for the most of the season, the line's been doing their job. He really hasn't been gotten to or...
This has nothing to do with Rush. This is basically just all on him.
Right.
They had him working with a sports psychologist in the preseason when this whole thing reared its head for the first time. They were trying to nip it in the bud. They had him working with people and really babying how many times he went out there until they figured, thought he had it figured out. And he still doesn't have it figured out.
Yeah.
And I got to believe, even though he made the game winner, we were talking about this morning, I really believe this might be one where you create an injury to put him on IR, even if you say his brain is injured, and you allow him to get like extensive therapy to try and get it out of his head with a sports psychologist.
He's got a torn ego.
Yeah, and you just get another veteran kicker in there, because this could hurt the Buccaneers. They're lucky they won last night, but look, they're not a bad team, and with all the teams that are faltering in the NFC, they could do some things But that's the kind of thing that could cost them the ability to do some things, because he could miss a kick when you need it and then put you in a really bad spot.
Well, it comes down to trust. I mean, even though he made the game winner, there were a lot of b-holes tightening up when he started trotting onto the field, because it was like, wow, this is it. If he misses this, it's overtime, and then who knows? And you may have to rely on him again in overtime. Is he going to start shanking extra points? I mean, he's making field goals at a 50% clip for the year, and that's just unacceptable. I mean, he has missed an extra point as well. You can't afford that when you're trying to win NFL football games. That's why Randy Bullock was run out of Houston.
Right.
And you got this kid that you invested all this money in. And I'm thinking about it while I'm watching him. I'm like, really? I know there's mechanics involved in kicking, just like there's mechanics involved in the golf swing. Mm-hmm. But I can't help but think, you know, is there something where sometimes you just don't know exactly where the ball is going to go? It's kind of like throwing a knuckleball, right?
Right.
Like you have mechanics up to the point where you release the ball. And once you release the knuckleball, then you have no idea what's going to happen. And I'm just curious how much of that goes into kicking where, okay, if you get your foot placement right and you hit the ball in the right spot, laces out, whatever. But at some point, you don't know. You can't predict the spin or how much or I don't know. It's amazing to watch this kid melt down and then come back and win the game. But I'm with you. I certainly would be working out kickers this week if I'm the head coach of the Tampa Bay Bucks.
And because you probably have a little Rick Smith if you're the GM and you don't want to admit you made a bad pick, so you're going to keep him around.
Sure.
Because you know that the way these stories go, you cut him, someone else picks him up, and all of a sudden he becomes the best kicker in football for 5 years.
Yep.
So, you know, looking it up, best kicker in ACC history, did win the Grozer Award twice, just basically had no reason not to draft the kid. I think second round might have been a little high, but everything in his college career said this guy was ready for big-time stuff.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, it's just one of those things where it's like the black cloud that gets into your head and just consumes you. Whether it's mechanics or otherwise, and it is, there's a lot that goes into it. And, you know, Travis has even said, look, the kickers are a different breed. And he went into the whole thing about how, while we're out there banging our heads off of each other, you know, they hit a couple of kicks, grab their golf clubs and go to the range. You know, they're not football players, so to speak, but of course their role is important. But this is one of those deals where you don't want to say that you made a bad pick, but I just think because they're in the discussion for playoff seedings in the NFC, that you just got to give this guy some time to figure it out, and then you go and you get you someone that's a veteran kicker that can carry you through the rest of the season, because it's just too risky.
It wouldn't surprise me if they did something. I mean, I know the kid can boot it on kickoffs, but that would be something if you're trying to kind of have an insurance policy. Maybe you go out and get a kickoff specialist, quote unquote, that you can use if this kid starts to falter again or he continues to have issues. Well, at least you have this other guy on the roster. Or, I don't know. I think they'd certainly need to look into it. But at the same time, he is a rookie. And you know, it doesn't – in the post-game interview, he didn't seem too mentally rattled. I mean, he started talking about, you know, you just got to go in there and forget about the past because you can't change it. And he sounded like he had all of his, you know – he was mentally stable.
Yeah, but I think that, again, just because you're trying to settle down your own mind, you're saying, hey, at least I made the one that mattered.
Yeah.
But I think that it goes back to when we say we would love to have a microphone when guys are, like, talking to other guys on the field.
Sure.
Because you know that the alignment and all those guys that are looking like they're telling him he's the greatest thing in sliced bread are probably saying, if you'd missed that one, man, whooped your...
Oh, yeah.
So it's crazy.
Without a doubt.
We won't miss it for you all day, every day, Monday through Friday, 1 to 4 p.m. We're here to bring you the best in radio and talk about what you want to talk about. So give us a call, 713-780-ESPN. You can text us, you can call us, and, of course, you can tweet us, at Barry is funny, at Pac-Man Joel with a K, and at No Hit Nick. We're here till 4, ESPN 97.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel Blank and Barry Laminack on a Tuesday afternoon in H-Town as we're trying to forget about a Texans loss to the Minnesota Vikings as they prepare for the Colts and Sunday night football on the national stage. Get to that in a little bit. Definitely want to wrap up what we were talking about in terms of the game last night. Monday Night Football, a lot of sports going on last night, a lot of things to catch up on. But I kept trying to force myself to watch the football game, boys, and I'll tell you what. Ugh. it just became more and more painful to try and watch it. And it wasn't just the missed field goals. It was just bad football. And you realize that the NFC is just a crap show right now. I mean, there's a couple, you know, there's a little cream at the top, but not definitely all the teams you would have expected, because Arizona's down, Carolina's down. But yet the Seattles and the Green Bays and the Minnesotas are up there.
The Cowboys.
The Cowboys are surprising. The big game this week, look, I'm not, and I don't hate on the team that the Packers play every week, but the Packers play the Cowboys this week. And I know there's plenty of Cowboys people that had a lot to say. We found that out yesterday. But that's a big game. And you didn't expect when Romo went down, just like you didn't expect when Teddy Bridgewater went down, that those two teams were going to be prominent in the NFC, but they are. And it's not the Dallas defense like Minnesota's defense. Mm-hmm. It's more that Dak Prescott has proven that he's coming in as a rookie along with Ezekiel Elliott and the best offensive line in football, and they're managing games. They are ball controlling it. They are doing what they need to do, and they're winning. That's just the bottom line. Getting W's week in, week out.
It's like rookies. Two rookies.
Yeah. Crazy, right?
That team, and you know, the head and shoulders above a lot of the teams in the NFC just by having two rookies there. And I love the quarterback controversy. I think, I mean, I heard you guys talking yesterday about what would you do. And, yeah, I don't know that I move away from the formula of winning. If you got to, you know, I don't know, when's Romo coming back? Week 8?
They say week 8, but now he's already had exams and said he didn't know where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
And when he says that, he doesn't say that means he's coming back earlier. But, you know, he's got to start getting a little itchy, too, going, this kid's really solidifying my job.
Yeah. How could you move away from a guy? Let's assume that the Cowboys go 6-2, right?
Okay, right.
Let's say that they're
lost this week.
Okay. Let's say that they're 6-2. How do you move away from that? How can you go in and say,
I asked the ex-player. I said yesterday, if you're in the locker room, Travis Johnson, and your team is winning, but supposedly a guy should never lose his job to injury, you know, and I brought up the Niners case when Harbaugh replaced Alex Smith when he got back to being healthy with Kaepernick and he never got his job back, which way would you lean? And he said, much like you said, I'm going with the hot hand.
Yeah.
If the guy got me there, then I'm rolling with him.
Yep.
And it's hard not to. I mean, I understand. And again, look, the salary cap is done for the year, so you're not going to cut him. There's a lot of Texans fans. There's a lot of fodder last night and yesterday going, wouldn't it be ironic if the Cowboys cut Romo and he came to the Texans? You should be so lucky, okay? Because that's not going to happen regardless. But the biggest thing is going to be that from a Cowboys perspective, there's worse situations to be in. Because if you ride the young kid and he falters, you got the experience
on
the bench.
You got the guy right there.
And he's going to be healthy. And he's going to be healthy because if you wait until he is healthy by riding the young kid,
mm-hmm.
you got two choices. That's better than having the choice you got right now on Kirby.
And you can make that switch mid-game. You don't have to wait from week to week. Or, you know, if mid-game when Tony Romo was healthy and you're in a big game, maybe a division game, maybe you're playing the Giants or the Redskins, and he just doesn't have it, you have the luxury now of going to Tony Romo and putting him in mid-game to try to, you know, come back or rally or whatever. I don't know. I don't see how you go away from it, but it's nice to have that problem.
Yeah, it's like salt in the wound times 10 if you're a Texans fan, because not only can you not figure out what's going on with your quarterback situation, but you know that not only in Big D are they winning, but they have two viable options at quarterback that both have proven they can play every single week.
Yep.
That you don't have on Kirby right now. And by the way, all you people that I predicted would be clamoring for Tom Savage the minute that Brock faltered again, be careful what you wish for, because you can be an unbelievable warrior as a quarterback in the preseason, but the regular season is a whole new ball game, and you're not going to want to see Tom Savage behind center. And maybe you are, but then you're basically saying that you don't really give a rat's rear end about the rest of the season, because he's not ready for prime time on a week-in, week-out basis yet, because he has done nothing to be what Dak Prescott's been to the Cowboys. And Whedon, forget it, right?
Yeah.
So that's when you should have had a veteran.
That's the wrong Dallas QB.
Right. So, yeah, exactly. So that's when you had a veteran, you had a veteran backup waiting. If you did, you would have had a great situation, so that you could have someone waiting if you really decide you need to make a change here. But I don't think Texans are going to make a change. Obviously, they spent a lot of money on Brock.
No. You're rolling with. Yeah,
I think it's like a 2-year project, because I think that's how they structured his contract, because they can kind of, you know, move past from him in the event that he didn't pan out, and they don't have to really suffer any like penalties or
Yeah, the guaranteed money is the key. Because you cannot, in the NFL, unlike the NBA and Major League Baseball, once you sign a contract, you're on the hook for all of it. You know, based on the guarantees, you can walk away from it. You just have egg on your face for looking like you really didn't do the right homework and getting the right guy. But it's not going to happen this year. So both teams in first place, right? So you're not in bad situation either way. But I was looking at the ESPN rankings as we got ready to come on the air, and the Texans are the worst ranked 3-2 team.
Oh, yeah.
And they're down at 18, unless you lost count and you're thinking fantasy football and there's only 12 teams in the league. 18 is not good for a 3-2 first place team. And the Cowboys are much higher because the Cowboys are impressive. The Cowboys are at 7. So the Cowboys playing the number 9 ranked team, Green Bay, this week. If Dak Prescott comes out and plays his tail off again and gets them a win at Green Bay, I don't know how you pull them out of the driver's seat.
I agree. Especially a win over a Green Bay.
Right.
That would be tough for me, man. I don't know that I could do it. I was, not to switch up too much, but I was looking at the box score, so I wanted to see what Osweiler's numbers were.
Mm-hmm.
184 yards, but more alarming than that to me, although that's pretty damning and pretty alarming, Alfred Blue led the team in rushing.
You mean Thunder?
Yeah. He had 39. I mean, combined, Blue and Miller got you 59 yards rushing. That's not good.
We had Chester Pitts in yesterday, and it was the mystery of all of us. How could you not run the ball more?
I don't understand it. Fedorowicz is your leading receiver, 4 catches for 61 yards. And this all goes back to something that I tweeted during the game is, well, you know, who is going to be the new play caller after this? Because Bill O'Brien, I don't think he called a good game at all. I thought that they were conservative. I thought that there was some questionable calls, some questionable plays that they ran at certain times in the game. I don't understand what the thought process was for some of these guys. I even put up a poll in Jess where I was like, so after today's whooping, who's next to take over play calling? Les Steckel, Rich Kotite, Rod Rust, or Tom Herman? And, of course, Tom Herman won the poll. But I don't understand where you go from here, because it was a terribly called
you
game.
You weren't in here yesterday? I needed a seatbelt to keep me in this chair. I was so fired up about all the things that went wrong. And I hit on what I said, how in the world, you switched it, that as your play caller, your head coach is your play caller. And at least in the first two series against Tennessee, you gave it to Miller, Fuller, and Fedorowicz, and you marched it down the field on two series mm-hmm. and possessions. Then all of a sudden you went completely away from it.
Yep.
But in a game against Minnesota where most people had the game written off midway through the second quarter, you had to figure out that Minnesota's going to pin their ears back, and if they know you're going to pass it on every down, you're screwed. But you got a good enough running back that we said yesterday, look, this guy leads the league in touches, mm-hmm. and what he's doing when he touches the ball is he's moving it for you, and you completely shut him out.
Yeah.
I didn't get it, and I'm with you. And I said, and I kept saying, when we tried to figure out who you point the finger at, who do you blame, I said that the hot seats had to be for Rick Smith and for Bill O'Brien. Travis was fighting me on it. I still believe it's the case. I believe it because if you're the coach that's taking ownership by saying, I'm going to call the plays, and then the play calling gets worse and more conservative, you have to start feeling the fire.
Well, special teams didn't help them.
And the defense
looked bad.
Yep.
I think, to me, this is the issue from that Texans game, is it's a coaching problem. I mean, they got out-coached. They weren't prepared. They looked bad. And, I mean, from week to week, this is the same guys. Their skill levels are where they're at. I mean, Osweiler wasn't great last week and then horrible this week. But he's been bad the whole time.
I hated the Kubiak thing.
Yeah.
If you pull the Kubiak, that's on me, and I didn't have him prepared. That same coach speak that we got from Kubes all the time. It's true, but as a fan, it's not only not what you want to hear, but you really don't want to hear it because of the way that the game went, and because the New England game already went that way too. That's when you say, okay, well, if it's on you, maybe we start looking at you and saying, what are you doing?
And they should. They got out-coached by New England. They got out-coached by the Vikings.
Absolutely.
That's obvious. And they got lucky. I said 2 weeks ago that win over Tennessee was fool's gold.
Yep.
And that's turned out to be the case. They can't beat a decent team.
Well, we can be good teams, and we can also never be outcoached, because we are here for you 1 to 4 p.m. every Monday through Friday right here, ESPN 97.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel Blank, Barry Laminack on a Tuesday afternoon where precipitation is coming, if it's not already there, wherever you are listening to us from as we look out the window. And I am not a weatherman. I did not stay at a Holiday Inn Select last night, but I can tell you, you are probably going to get wet by the end of the day because it looks kind of nasty out there. So why not keep us tuned in?
I don't have to water. My water bills are atrocious.
Yes.
2 months in a row, I've had over a $500 water bill.
Ooh, yeah. $500 yeah. for water. Yeah. I understand air conditioning.
You have a water leak somewhere?
No.
It's crazy.
I got a lot of grass I got to water. I water every 4 days, and I think,
good
yeah.
Lord.
Yeah, well,
I water, I know, I was
I have 16 zones on my sprinkler system. And I'll tell you how big
palatial Laminack Manor.
It's a big yard.
Must have a football field in the backyard.
I've got 1.3 acres, so it's a big yard.
Okay, well, that
yeah.
explains it.
Yeah.
You got to have rooms for the cat to roam.
I'm balling with
cats have to roam.
Yeah, you know, I got a playground in the yeah. back for them. It's like a little tunnel thing. It's, yeah.
I know that my pool guy has taken the liberties to set the settings on a pool that we don't use on, like, high.
Mm-hmm.
And our bill got $300, and I was like, oh, no.
I had an $800 water bill last year in July. And then my water company is on Channel 13 News being investigated for price gouging. I was like, well, yeah. You could have just called me. I'd have told you.
Maybe they are. Maybe they will. Maybe you'll I know people. I might be able to put you on Channel 11.
Just do it.
There you go.
I'll do it.
Hey, speaking of a bill that you aren't really keen about paying, how about $17 million a year and $72 million for a quarterback that's underperforming?
Yeah.
And because of it, and because your head coach took over the play calling capabilities or responsibilities, the team hasn't done any better. So with that, I said yesterday, I continue to say it today, Barry's agreeing with me, unlike Travis, at some point you got to take the Kingsford and sprinkle it around his desk chair and set that bad boy up with a lit match and say, you're on the hot seat, and so is Rick Smith, in my mind. But one way or the other, let us know what you think. And Adam, calling from Liberty, wants to chime in. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to comment. I think the worst part about the Texans is Bill O'Brien. It's not just his play calling, but it's just coaching decisions in general. I'll give you a couple examples. Almost every game, there'll be like a third and long situation, like third and eight, third and nine, third and 12, you know, for example. And he'll try to run the ball multiple times over multiple games. It don't make any sense to me because they haven't had, you know, an 8 yard run all day. But here you are going to try to give your only chance on this run that hasn't worked all day. And it's not surprising nobody because he does it every time. So I can't comprehend that.
Yeah, don't you also feel too an extra level of frustration where you put it on him because of the fact that at press conference and otherwise, he's not going to tell you anything other than what he wants to tell you. There's a little bit of an arrogance with that. And because of it, and because it's the Belichick way, but you have proven you're not Belichick, it kind of ticks you off even more to say, I'm willing to point the finger quicker because.
Yeah.
Are you
there? Yeah, I just can't comprehend, and he just doesn't own up to his part. But you know, also on that Vikings game in the fourth quarter, they had 9 minutes left. They're down by 25, and they're just going to run the ball constantly and take 6 minutes off the clock to get halfway down the field. Like,
yep.
Did they give up? I just didn't understand that either.
Oh, you know, I don't think there's any question. But I said other than five guys that were on the field busting their ass, I thought a lot of the team looked like they had given up. They came in looking scared, and they left looking like they had given up. And I thought that they started mailing it in and giving it up at the half.
I disagree that they came in looking scared.
I totally agree.
You really think that they
came in? I don't think they came in looking scared at all. I think these are NFL players. I don't think anyone's coming in scared of the Vikings. I think what happened is they were shell-shocked once they looked up and found themselves down 17-0 right away.
Yeah, but you told me that that offenses coming in to play the Vikings leading up to that game were scared of the fact that...
No, I didn't say scared.
Yes, you did. You said teams are looking at the Vikings defense looking like they were scared of their defense.
No, I would never say scared. We need to go back and pull
that. But I'm just saying, the bottom line is that it looked like the Astros when they were playing the Rangers, only it looked a little worse. In their eyes, when you were looking at the sidelines and you were looking at these guys midway through the second quarter, it looked like they were defeated. And that bothered me. You're not.
Oh, you're talking to me?
Yes.
I thought you were talking to him.
No. Because
I disagree with you. I don't know how else to tell you. I don't think these grown men were scared. I think that they got shell-shocked. They were down. Just like if you go back and look at the fans were shell-shocked. Well, this is a bleep show. Oh, this is horrible. I can't believe this. It's already over. I mean, people were already tweeting at me to make some Jordan cry memes for the Texans. And it wasn't even the end of the second quarter yet. It's like... I think that it was similar to what happened to them in the Kansas City game. They go in, they're pumped up in the playoff game, I mean, and then all of a sudden you get that kickoff return for a touchdown, and you're shell-shocked, and you don't know what to do, and it was too late to recover. You're not going to recover against a team and a defense as good as the Vikings if you put yourself in a 17-0 hole straight off the bat. And So I don't think it was a matter of them being scared. I think they were underprepared or ill-prepared, and that's on coaching. And I think that once they got in there, they got hit. They got hit in the mouth, and they didn't respond.
Let me say this. Osweiler looked scared to get hit after a while. I felt like in their eyes, you can call it whatever you want, I felt like they looked defeated.
Well, that's different, though.
I understand. But I also think, too, that midway through the second quarter, there's still so much game left to be played. For you to you started out conservative, and to go from conservative to completely abandoning the run to try and just pass. And to your point that when Blue is your leading rusher, when you got a guy that's been touching the ball more than anybody and being productive when he touches it, both in the receiving game and the rushing game, you abandon the run when you're so conservative. But the one thing that is a characteristic of that conservatism is you run the football. You give Lamar Miller the ball, and he doesn't touch it. It looked like midway through the second quarter, it was just basically, we're going to take this L.
Yeah, but that's a difference, though. I mean, there's a difference in getting hit in the mouth early in the game and giving up, you know, well, they gave up 3 touchdowns on a field goal before they ever got a field goal from Nick Novak. So, I mean, to be down 24-0 right away, that's different than saying that they were scared going in. I don't know how you can even judge if these guys look scared.
Now, I didn't say scared going in. I'm going back to a conversation we had last week, but I'm saying that once that all that damage that you're talking about happened, they look. You can call it whatever you want, but they looked defeated. They looked like they were done. They looked like they looked at that defense and said, "There's no way we're doing anything against these guys."
Well, you could see it in Bill O'Brien's body language on the sidelines when he was trying to. He would call a play and it wouldn't happen. At one point, you could see him exacerbated and cussing and storming off on another 3-and-out. And I don't blame him, but at the same time, it's a preparation thing.
But that's where I blame him. Midway through the second quarter, you still got plenty of game left where you could do some things.
But here's to your point, without saying they were scared, I think at that point, reality sets in that 24-0 against that defense is almost insurmountable. I mean, it's possible, but it's almost insurmountable at that point.
You use the adjective you want, whether it be fearful, whether it be whatever you want to say, but that's not what I want out of my coach.
Well, sure, no.
And that's not what I want on my play caller, because whether you're working on things for this week for Tennessee, I mean, for the Colts to show that you can do them, or whether you're trying to prove to your own team, hey, look, we can still do some things here and we need to do what we do best, you don't abandon the run and you don't get even more. You go from conservative when you think you're in the game and then you're not. And then instead of being conservative, you're throwing it on every down and you're setting your quarterback up to get crushed and he's trying to extend plays too much and the line's not blocking well enough and it just all falls apart and you still have about 6 minutes to play in the second quarter. Happened way too soon for me. Really aggravated me because I thought that they could make a statement in this game to show that they were better than people were giving them credit for, even though their record was good. And now... just like Miami and Atlanta games last year when you got lambasted, you already got two on the L side. The two L's aren't just losses. They were absolute ass kickings.
Mm-hmm.
And you still got a 3/4 of your schedule left. Who knows? And who's to say that there's not another one coming? And you got some pretty formidable opponents coming up with Green Bay, with Denver, with some of the teams that are still on your schedule.
Yeah, but I did look at their schedule, right? And I think that it matters how you lose, right? Like if you look horrible like they did when you lose to the Vikings and the Patriots, that's bad. But think about what you've got on the upcoming schedule. You've got the Colts next week. You could probably beat the Colts.
Okay.
You've got the Broncos. You're going to lose. You can probably beat the Lions, or you might lose the Lions. Who knows? But you can probably beat them. It's you have a decent shot. The Jaguars, the Raiders, the Chargers. It's not until the Packers that they play another elite team, right? So if you look at their next eight games, and I was including the Vikings when I did this, if they win 4-4 over their next eight games, they're 7-5 going into the final stretch, right? And you've got the Jags, the Bengals, and the Titans to close out your. I mean, this is a team that could still go 10-6 if you look at the schedule.
Because so, okay, but here's,
it's not time to panic, but there are certainly a ton of warning signs.
I'm going to tell you this. If it doesn't go like you said just now, this week, if they go on national TV,
oh boy,
and they lay another egg,
oh boy,
and they come in conservative, and then they leave whenever it gets out of hand, or they get away from it early, and you know that the national media is going to put a big blazing spotlight on it, I'm going to tell you that whole season can go completely ablaze. In one game.
I don't like the matchup against the Colts either.
And I'm agreeing with you, but nah. I don't see Sunday night as chalking it up for a dub. I say this might be the last chance for them to save face for this entire season by doing things that they have the weapons to do that they have chosen not to do. If they come out conservative again, and if, God forbid, Luck starts slinging that thing around and wants to make a statement in his hometown and they start fighting T.Y. Hilton and company, and Frank Gore is showing balance, and they're moving the football. Boy, oh boy, guys, I'm telling you, I don't think you even worry about the Green Bay game coming and all the other games down the road. It's going to get ugly in a hurry.
I'm telling you, though, this is a team that, based on their schedule, they have a realistic chance to finish the year 10-6. Look what they did last year. They started 2-5. They started
as good a chance as they had to finish 10-6. They got a real good chance to finish 6-10.
They went 2-5, and the same talks that we're having right now were had last year on the air all over the city, and they finished it 7-2 to go 9-7 and get into the playoffs, and then get blown out. But still, it's a long season.
I agree with you, but it could be really long if they don't win this game Sunday and show some signs of life on offense. I just think there's way too much talent on offense, and who'd have thought that Fedorowicz was going to come out to be a pass-catching tight end? But when you have Miller, when you have the two receivers, when you have supposedly your franchise quarterback, and you have tight ends that are catching the football, and you've got Dwayne Brown back, you've got to be able to do some things to show that you can open it up and you have weapons. Don't be so conservative all the time. It's going to be interesting to see. I think it's a big, 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 big game Sunday night.
When we get back from the break, I'm going to read you some stats that you might believe, but you might not at the same time.
He's Daryl Morey. I'm Joel Blank. We'll be back with more ESPN 97.5 FM.
Separation first class.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel Blank and the Daryl Morey of comedy, Barry Laminack, until 4 p.m., along with Nick Shirara behind the glass. And we're here to bring a little sunshine to your otherwise cloudy and rainy afternoon in Houston, Texas. And we have been talking about the Texans. And we have, not surprisingly, been talking about all the things that have gone wrong. And who might be to blame. And in the context of doing that, we've had some pregnant pauses when Barry has seen and heard enough. But now Barry is going to bring to us the numbers about the Texans.
Sometimes I just stop listening to you.
That's fine.
That's where the pregnant pause.
My wife does the same thing. I'm used to it.
I just take off the headphones, lay down the carpet.
First of all, that's false because I can see you. But okay, that's fine. So
you don't have to run.
Pick up where we left off.
Yeah. So I was looking at the AFC South standings, and they give you kind of win loss percentages and all that. Here's something that's disturbing. All right, points for and points against are reversed. The Colts at 2-3 have scored 137 points, allowed 148. Your Houston Texans have scored 82 and have allowed 104. And then in the middle, in between there, is Tennessee, who have scored 92 and allowed 101. So you've scored the least amount, and you're giving up the second most between those three teams. Now, I didn't include Jacksonville because they're 3-1 and they've had a bye, so that skews the numbers.
They're 1-3, right?
I'm sorry, 1-3, yeah. They've played four games. So that kind of skews the numbers a little bit. But of the three teams that have played five games, the Texans have scored the least amount and given up the second most. And yet they're still 3-2. And that's why I keep telling people, yes, it is fool's gold. That win against the Titans was fool's gold. But they still have an opportunity to right this ship. So don't panic.
Okay, here's the thing. I don't disagree that they have the opportunity, but they have as the equal amount of opportunity to crap the bed on the entire season just as quickly. Oh, that's why I'm saying Sunday's such a big game. And with these stats that you're backing up, the fact of the matter is, I said before the Minnesota game, they look like and people are treating them like the worst 3-1 team in first place in the league. They did nothing to dispel that as just rumor and fodder and innuendo, because now they're the 18th ranked team in the ESPN power rankings. And oh, by the way, they're in first place and they're 3-2. But when your two losses are absolute ass kickings, your coach has come in to take over play calling, which you assume will make the play calling better, and it hasn't gotten better. That's where all this comes from.
Yeah.
I'm frustrated watching it because I want them to do well. I watch them, and I know the passion in this fan base. I know we're in football Mecca. But football Mecca is starting to get a little bit restless, too, with the fact that this ain't going the way everybody saw it.
I don't want them to do well because it makes the day goes by so faster when we get all the calls from all the angry, irate Texans fans on the ledge. That makes it go by faster. So I kind of hope that it... No, I'm just kidding. Baylor Bear Joe Tant tweeted us and asked, or tweeted me, if not Billy O, then who?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
don't give me
I think
attention.
I... Huh?
He tweeted us.
Oh, it looks like it was just to me. Your name's not on there.
I got one. I got one set just from him to me.
Oh,
same
well,
thing.
See. Oh, so he's sending out separate tweets.
He's getting a little bit more love.
Oh, okay.
Spread
I
it
see
out.
How it is. Listen, Joe.
Joe is doing the spread offense.
Yeah, he's so it's I mean, it's obviously way too soon for that question.
You want me to answer that though? You can answer it.
Yeah, I'll go first. Ken Bone, obviously. Kenneth
Without
Bone
question.
Is the answer to that question. At least let him take over play calling duty.
Houston's own
Please.
Version of Ken Bone. And how they take it is Rick Smith. Rick Smith at some point has to start taking the blame, because I said yesterday the sample size is going to be the first thing questioned. Was it big enough to look at Osweiler after seven games and say, this is our guy? And when you take that and you put it in your blender along with all the screwed up drafts in which your third, fourth, fifth round picks, which were supposed to at least be special teams guys, were cut midseason because they were smoking doob and doing whatever they were doing on the road in the hotel. And you start looking at some of the Xavier Sulafilos instead of Derek Carrs, and you run the gamut on some of those picks, even not taking Mac and taking Clowney. You can go all over the board. It has to add up. I know he's like family to the McNairs, but at some point, he has to be on the hot seat too. Not promoted, not continually extended like he was in the offseason. These guys have to face the music.
Do you think that he went out and got Brock Osweiler on his own?
No, not completely on his own, but that's why I'm saying the two guys that should be on the hot seat. I think it's a two-headed monster, and I think it's those two guys.
O'Brien looked at film and said, yeah, I can coach that guy. I can win with that guy. Let's go get that guy. That had just as much to do with it, because I don't think Rick Smith is going out and making a decision like that on a franchise quarterback
and
that much money without the input of Bob McNair, without the input of the coaching staff, the quarterback's coach, the offensive coordinator, the head coach. I think all of that goes into it. And the scouts. So to put it on just Rick Smith, I think, is a little unfair in that regard. Because remember, too, a lot of this, he's getting his information from somebody. I mean, Rick Smith isn't the one evaluating all the talent. He's making the final decisions. But how much of this is their scouting department? How bad are these guys that they send out there to go make these evaluations? And just in his defense, for every time you bring up Xavier Sulafilo, how many teams out there are kicking themselves that they passed on J.J. Watt? So there are multiple examples on both sides. And I think, to me, this season it comes down to the coaching staff is not getting the job done.
I agree with that.
So,
but I think, and I'm just saying that the two people squarely on the hot seat are Billy O and Rick Smith. Because at the end of the day, unless you've got Mark Cuban, the owners aren't watching tape. The owners aren't like knee deep in the day-to-day operation. They're allowing the guys, Jerry Jones as well, but at the same time, most of these guys are letting the people that they hired do the jobs that they were hired to do. But you're right. I don't think any general manager makes a move without the head nod and the approval of the head coach. But because these two guys both probably got in a room and huddled and said, yeah, this is a guy we think we can build our franchise around. And because it was more pressing than most that they get a franchise quarterback because of all the revolving door of quarterbacks they've had in the past, they went out and got this guy. And so far, not so good. So yeah. We'll see.
Jason Hebert.
Yep, loyal listener.
It says, so Catman Barry is funny. Thinks the Houston Texans Titanic can be patched, huh? Yeah, they did it last year. Why is that so hard to believe that it could be done? They started 2-5 and went to the playoffs. Of course it could be patched. They have a winning record right now. There is hope, but they've got to turn it around. They've got to start coaching better and playing better. But yes, I think it could still turn around. It is not time to panic yet. And you're talking to a guy who gave up on the Astros in July.
That just shows you're just too quick to throw in the towel all over the place.
What?
That's fine. I appreciate you thinking that the Texans are going to be 10-6, and that it all.
I
starts
said they
Sunday.
Could. I never hold on now, Joe. Hold
I
on.
Don't know, Nick. I know what I heard.
I said that it's possible based on the schedule that they finish the season 10-6.
You said they could be 10-6.
You said will. I said could.
I said the could under the radar a little bit, but hey, it makes for good radio. And you know what good radio is? Monday through Friday, right here, ESPN 97.5 FM.
Listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.